Welcome to Sidebars, Kilpatrick Townsend's limited podcast series focused on women and underrepresented groups in patent law. I'm April Abley Isaacson, a patent litigator and office managing partner of the San Francisco office.
And I'm Kate Geyer, a patent litigation associate in Seattle. We're here to discuss the gender gap in the patent bar and have candid conversations with female patent practitioners on their career paths.
Welcome back to Sidebars. In this episode, we will be discussing burnout in the legal profession and have a special co-host, Casey Cabala. Casey is an associate in Kilpatrick Townsend's Raleigh office. In 2015, she received her BS in Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering with a minor in Biotechnology from North Carolina State University, go Wolfpack, where she graduated summa cum laude and was the valedictorian and received the Top 10 Scholar Athlete Award. In 2018, Casey received her law degree from William & Mary Law School with an intellectual property concentration. More recently, Casey was a member of a trial team representing a multinational footwear and sports apparel company in a patent infringement litigation and importation investigation. The case settled shortly before the evidentiary hearing at the ITC. Casey was also an integral member of the trial team representing a gaming and internet media company in a large-scale patent battle resulting in more than $100 million in jury verdicts in favor of the client. Casey, welcome to Sidebars.
Thanks so much for having me today.
One of the reasons that wanted to have you as along with Kate is you are two of the superstar associates that we have in the patent litigation group, and I know you both work extremely hard, and obviously, you know, burnout, it's real. So thought it would be great to get you involved in the conversation with us today. But one of the things I wanted to ask you is to give a little bit of background about yourself, because I know you were a student athlete, as you know, I mentioned previously. So can you talk a little bit about your background?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I can start with student athlete. So I played soccer growing up through college, which I really feel like created a lot of the values and habits I still have today. You know, really just focused on, you know, prioritizing a team and creating a lot of structure and sometimes a competitive nature in my life. But also, you know, being a part of a team, I still prioritized academics. You know, I always say, you know, student came before athlete. And, you know, I focused a lot on chemical engineering and studies. So I actually started at NC State in their textile engineering program, which I kind of had a goal when I came to college of maybe working for an athletic company, just given my nature and, you know, ties to sports. But realized after my first semester that I thought, you know, the chemical side would be a better fit, just based on, you know, taking chemistry and how I performed in that class, but also the variety of career paths that it could take you in after graduation. I don't know what your engineering programs are like, but for mine, we had to take an intro class the first year where you learn about all the different disciplines. And, you know, in chemical engineering, you could go to med school, pharmacy school, work as an engineer, and, you know, different industries within that, or also go to law school. So that kind of led me to law. But I think really the main turning point where I transitioned from science to law was, I think in my junior year, I worked in a lab, which I enjoyed it. I really liked the underlying science, but I spent about 4 months counting cells under a microscope, which...
That sounds very familiar because I did the exact same thing and it could not be more boring and isolating.
Yeah, exactly. And isolating was the thing that I didn't like. You know, I wanted to be in a little bit more of like a social and a team-driven environment. You know, kind of ties into my nature with sports. And my academic advisor at the time recommended that I explore law school and particularly patent law. And, you know, I was kind of hooked from that point on.
Well, yeah, and I know you went to William & Mary. Was there anything in particular that made you choose to go to that school?
Yeah, I looked at other schools, really kind of was focusing on the East Coast, just to stay close to family. But I really picked William & Mary based on the community. You kind of like the student athlete experience. I really liked feeling like part of a team. And the second I stepped foot in William & Mary on an admitted students weekend, I felt that support and the community on campus.
And how did you find your way to Kilpatrick Townsend?
Kind of a similar path. You know, I know we all go through interviews. I went to Loyola, which was a little bit like a rat race for a patent law interview program. But I remember going to Kilpatrick, and it just felt like home to me. I'm still good friends with some of the people that I met at Loyola, and then the callback interview process. And it immediately like felt a support system that Kilpatrick has, and I still see that today.
And didn't you do the interviews at the Loyola program this summer? Is that right?
I did, which is funny seeing everything come back full circle.
But it was also when you were in the midst of this hotly contested multinational case. Is that correct? But you still made the time?
Yeah, that's right. It was as we were wrapping up expert discovery. So trying to balance that while drafting expert reports and getting those out the next week was a little bit of a struggle, but made it through it.
As I think we all know, because we struggled with it at different times, and I know I've talked to each of you about times when you felt that you were overwhelmed with work, and I certainly have felt that in my career, and it's the reason that we wanted to have this episode. So I'll go through a little bit of information about burnout, and then that can hopefully frame our discussion about how it's something that in particular affects attorneys. The WHO says that burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as a result of chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. So that's an interesting definition. The Mayo Clinic says a special type of work-related stress, a state of physical or emotional exhaustion that also involves a sense of reduced accomplishment and loss of personal identity. Maybe I'll toss it out to the two of you and see if any of those definitions resonate with you.
I really like the WHO definition because I think it recognizes one of the core issues it's not just the existence of stress, but it's stress that has not been successfully managed, which I think is both a responsibility of each individual to work within themselves. But I think there's a larger responsibility also from law firms in the legal industry as well to recognize that stress and to provide ways to address it. So I really like that definition.
How about you, Casey?
Yeah, I agree. I think the only thing I maybe would tweak in both of them is both of them are tied to work. And I feel like that is an important consideration, but I realize that it's also sometimes part of a bigger picture where you have other stresses in your life that maybe are coming from sources outside of work.
Yeah, just family and other things in your life. Yeah, I mean, it could even be, you know, a sick pet, a sick parent. I mean, anything like that that's going to add that extra stress. So then maybe let's talk a little bit about what it is about attorneys in particular that make us prone to suffering from burnout and some of the consequences. And I'm going to toss it out to the two of you. Like I said, superstars, but some of the hardest workers that I've ever worked with in my entire career, and, you know, grinders, but, you know, for many reasons. So love to hear your perspective.
So I think there's a lot of it comes from the personality types that are probably attracted to the law. And I think Casey is a prime example of you heard all the work. She was the top of her class in college while being a student athlete, while doing lab work, and just was able to balance all those things and succeed. And I think, and I'll toss it to Casey after this, but I think people who are able to do a lot and do well at it and manage it, keep themselves kind of at that threshold level of I can do this well. I've done it well in the past. I need to continue to keep with this level of work and keep pushing higher and keep doing this well. So I think there's a driven, competitive, high-achieving personality type that is just driven to the law in general. And I'll toss it to Casey because she seems to fit that mold pretty well.
Yeah, I remember someone telling me in law school, you know, it's a cake-eating contest where the prize is more cake, which I never really felt ring home until maybe my second or third year of practice. But it's definitely true. It's, you know, it really just builds on, you know, once you, you feel like, you know, you're doing well in the case, you want to keep doing that. Like you want to bring on more work, you know, in terms of an internal perspective, but then it also turns into business development a little bit later. And we're just always trying to achieve a little bit more, and it just continuously builds.
When, and I also see that, you know, I've seen this over the course of my career, it's almost like you get negatively rewarded. So in other words, if you're the person that's the go-to and does excellent work, then everyone wants to work with you. And then it becomes difficult to say no. So then all of a sudden you have way too much work to do, and you kind of put up the white flag of surrender a little bit, but it's not always necessarily seen or heard. What do you think about that?
I mean, I personally struggle with saying no to people, especially people I respect and really want to work with. So when I always appreciate those follow-up assignments or saying people, I want to work with you again. And it's the type of people who it's like, yes, you're exactly who I want to work for. I want to do this work for you. So that's a struggle for me personally, because it's all work I want to do. It's just balancing that desire and the kind of the people pleasing nature of it with actually having time to do all that and do it well.
Yeah. And I think just to kind of tie into that, you know, it's like we want to, we're pretty high achieving, want to do it for ourselves, but we also want to keep everyone else happy. And you feel like when you are saying no, that you're going to either let down the partner you're having to turn down, or you're going to shift work to someone else in your team who maybe is just as busy. And so you're really like trying to strike a delicate balance of looking out for yourself, but, you know, still keeping everyone else happy.
And, you know, there's data that suggests that women are more likely to have burnout than men. And curious if you, either of you, have any thoughts about what it is about us women that makes us uniquely situated in that regard.
Yeah, I think one thing is, like, women are always multitasking. I think we're inherent multitaskers. I don't know about you, Kate and April, but I feel like I'm always doing multiple things at once. And with that, you know, it feels like we take more on than maybe we really can handle, or than maybe a male counterpart would. And that just creates more to try to balance.
And I think as we talked about in our last episode, which I realize, Casey, you haven't heard yet because it hasn't actually come out. As we talked about in our last episodes, I think women also take on other responsibilities and cases beyond just the substantive tasks. They take on organizing tasks, which take a lot of time to put together task lists and to make sure and to check in with everyone and make sure assignments are being completed on time, and kind of providing some of that oversight and management role, which is also just extra on top of the substantive work that they're doing for the cases. And I think there's also the work-life balance issue of there's hundreds and hundreds of articles and studies that still confirm that women do significantly more of the work at home, whether it's the just cleaning, chores, or just the mental work of, again, organizing, making sure people are getting to the doctor's appointments, making sure dentist appointments, or making sure after school stuff is scheduled, or working on kind of that coordinating nature. For me, it comes up when my dog is sick, is I'm the one who schedules someone to come play with him and walk him or check in with him during the day. So it shows up in a lot of different forms, but I think there's extra work responsibility we take on, and then we still take on a lot of responsibility at home. And kind of a third point to all that is that organizing stuff and that mental workload, like, that's really hard and that's exhausting to keep it all straight. So I think it's both the extra work and the type of work that women tend to do that just add a lot of stress on top of just making sure you're getting substantive work done.
And I know for me, even, you know, when I had to kind of project manage, so to speak, my dad, when he was ill for 4 years, my younger brother, who, you know, is one of my best friends, but he's kind of like, well, I'm just kind of too busy to really deal with it. And I don't know if he thought, because I have a desk job and he has a different type of job, that somehow I should just take that on. And then even when my dad died and then I was his executor, having to do that as like another part-time job to kind of project manage all of that. And it, my brother helped me a little bit, but it was sort of like, I'm the only daughter. Something, it all got pushed onto me. which, you know, of course I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do. And I am the organized one, you know, buzzword, right? But then I also had a full-time job to do at the same time, in addition to doing this. So to your point, for whatever reason it is, I do think that we take on more of these things. And as I mentioned last time, you know, my husband will be the first to admit that he's not organized. So the way our home is organized is because of me. So other than his office, I let him deal with that.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I feel like now reflecting on it, I probably spend more time just as a project manager than actually doing substantive work most days, which I like. I mean, I know we all are probably super organized, so some of that fits my personality pretty well. But I do feel like it, at some point, is it, you know, limiting me in terms of like getting substantive experience, you know, working with an expert or playing a role in another aspect of a case, where most of my time is spent managing discovery and deadlines and, you know, I would say a little bit more case management.
Yeah. And the thing is, I worked as in-house counsel, and there are people whose jobs are to be project managers. I mean, that's what they get paid for. And some of them, they're absolutely outstanding at it. But to your point, Casey, it kind of is a part-time job, and we can't always bill clients for that work that we're doing to keep the trains running on time. Right. You know, and I think we've all heard the sort of like sleep when you're dead mentality. I know that was a big thing when I was in the military, right? You don't really need sleep. So, you know, what do you think it is about attorneys in particular that make us susceptible to burnout? I know we talked a little bit about our personality types. What are some other things that, whether it's the nature of the law firm itself or just kind of what you've seen in the years since you become associates at the firm?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely a lot of on-the-job demands. You know, most of us are type A, which I realize is personality driven, but that leads to a very competitive environment.
Type A plus, maybe.
Yeah. that leads to a competitive environment where, you know, I think we tend to wear the amount that we overwork or work as a badge of honor. You know, that turns into long hours, late nights. And it's just, it becomes cyclical.
I think it's also just somewhat the nature of the industry is we're a service industry. We have clients who we have to meet their demands. And yes, there are some pushback you can do, but we really do work at the behest of our clients. And as junior associates, there's our clients are the partners who then work for other clients. So we kind of have multiple levels of people who our jobs are meant to help them out. So I think that the fact that the client is the boss and the client can set those expectations, including sometimes some unreasonable expectations, but there's sometimes good business reasons for those expectations as well. So I think just the nature of our job being a service industry, and then you add on top of that just the personality types that create a law firm environment that in some ways glamorizes stress or underplays it a little bit.
No, it's a good point. It actually takes me back to something that happened when I was an associate where I was working on a district court case, but there was a parallel ITC investigation. And so I was asked kind of at the last minute to help because it was an, you know, overlapping patent that I was in charge of as an associate. And I ended up having to stay all night. So I slept on the floor of my office for like 45 minutes. And the next day I was obviously wearing the same thing. I lived like 45 minutes away, an hour away. So I couldn't go home. And then the partners thought it was awesome that I had to stay all night, that I was wearing the same office. They were like clapping about it. They just thought that was like the best, which to me is kind of horrifying. But it kind of goes to your point, Kate, of, you know, it almost glamorized the fact that I was needing to stay overnight. And I will say it wasn't the only time I had to stay overnight to work on things that came up at the last minute. But the client wanted me to be involved because I had worked up that patent on the district court case and thought that they needed me to help this other law firm get some things over the finish line for the ITC investigation.
Yeah, I felt at our firm, it's not quite as glamorizing it. Like there's definitely a recognition when such work happens that it's appreciated, but there's no clapping involved. If I got clapped at every time I
Yeah,
I pulled it an all-nighter.
It was not here, just to be clear. Yeah.
But I think at the same time, there's not always, there's recognition that that type of work shouldn't be required. It happens from time to time, but it shouldn't get to that point. But I'm not always sure the next step is taken to discuss how to prevent it from happening again. So I think there's definitely been some change in how much it's glamorized. I think it tends to be more associate to associate that I see it, where people talk about their hours and compare hours. But I'm not sure that there's also a recognition that that is bad and shouldn't happen.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but I feel like part of that is it almost takes, there's a lag between like how you can implement a solution for that. You know, whether it's we need to hire someone else or we need to shift work to another associate, there's a lag that can happen with that. So you don't ever have a quick solution.
Yeah. And I know that each of you individually have talked to me when there's been points where you've been just staffed on too many things and have too much going on. You know, what was it inside you where you, I mean, is it just you felt like you were kind of at the brink and then just realized I need to figure out a way to get myself out of this situation? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what was it that kind of clicked in your head that made you realize you needed to reach out and seek some assistance?
I feel like for me, it's I start to notice how I interact with other people and like the social aspects for me. Either, you know, like I'll have a little bit more of a short temper, or maybe I'll be stressed when I'm communicating with my friends, family. And that's where I feel like it hits, because I feel like that comes after, you know, maybe I'm not sleeping as much and I'm not having, or I'm not paying attention to the physical aspect of burnout. It's that social aspect that hits later when I really start to realize it.
I actually have one of the same things. Earlier this year, when I was in a state of needing help, I ended up snapping at one of the senior associates I was working with. And to his great credit, his response was to pause the conversation and ask if I was okay. So he recognized that behavior was not normal, and in a very gentle way, like checked in with me. And I don't think I realized I was doing it until he asked that question. But I very much appreciated in that moment knowing, kind of being called out for it, but in a way that like that understood that I was not actually okay, because I was not behaving as normal. And the other thing that normally for me is if I recognize that I am staffed like at capacity, and if one thing goes wrong, if one person can't do an assignment, or if someone goes on paternity leave, or if someone gets sick and needs to take a couple days off, or if I have a technical issue and I lose the brief that I had just spent all night writing, and it completely collapses everything going on, that's probably way too late to recognize it. But that's also when I realize that if I don't have room for something to go wrong and I have to drop things to fix it, I've got too much going on.
A little bit of a house of cards, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and then the good thing is that the senior associate recognized that something wasn't quite right and did the right thing in terms of checking in with you and trying to figure out what was going on, because it seemed out of your nature, it sounds like. Well, and I wonder, I've heard from some people that because of COVID and the work at home, they feel like, you know, used to, and lawyers never worked 5 days a week. Let's just be honest, you know, especially once, you know, I got a BlackBerry, like that was when I, you know, my life changed completely for the rest of my life as a lawyer, right? Because you're chained to that and there's the instant communication. But do you feel like the line between work and home has gotten blurred more because of the hybrid work environment? Or do you think it's gotten better because you have this ability to have flexibility in terms of when you come to the office?
I may be in the minority here, but I still come in every day. And I think I only work from home for like 3 weeks. But keeping in the routine and seeing people here, I think helps regulate that balance. So it does at least force me to, you know, even if it's for a 30-minute or an hour period, to transition to home. Maybe a lot of times I do log back on and do more work at home, but it does kind of give me that opportunity to at least hit pause and take a break before I go back online. And I also like the social aspect of seeing other people around. That kind of rejuvenates me and I feel much better when I'm coming in every day.
How about you, Kate?
I took the opposite approach because my commute is over an hour each way. So for me, not commuting actually helped in a lot of ways to free up more time and to give me more time to get work done in normal business hours so that I could enjoy my nights. So in some ways, the working from home has been really helpful. But I think, April, as you mentioned, it really has removed that work-life balance. Because when I commuted from work, I took a ferry. So that physical separation of being on the ferry for 30 minutes, watching the Seattle skyline disappear into the distance, was just that like mental stop in my brain of like, work is over there and you left it behind and now you're home. I feel like people at work have not abused that too much. I think it's given me flexibility to work when I want to, but has also led me to working more hours just because if I'm work at home, if my computer's just sitting in the living room, for example, and I see an email, I'm going to go respond to it. So I think it's more of an internal driven lack of boundaries than it's really been like the firm or people I work with.
Yeah, and I noticed that because I was at home for, I guess it was a little bit over a year. And then anytime, you know, I get up early, as both of you know, and would look at things before I went to bed. So then there's that little green light that you knew someone was online. Oh, you know, maybe I should respond. And then you kind of go down the rabbit hole. So now what I do, because I do work in the office every day, and fortunately, I can just walk to the office, I actually leave my work laptop at the office. And then when I go home, I use Citrix on my home laptop. So that's like my way to have hygiene. And then also, too, it doesn't show my status. And I don't see someone else's status. So it keeps me from like just keep working all day. I don't know. That's just the thing that ended up kind of working for me. It sounds like it's like slightly in between maybe what both of you do.
Yeah, I should learn from that.
Yeah, it's what I ended up doing, because otherwise I was like, I'm responding to people at 5:30 in the morning, which is ridiculous. And then 10:30 or whatever time at night, I see someone and I was like, yeah, this just needs to stop. And it's my own fault. Like, I recognize that was my own fault and that I created the situation where I wasn't having any boundary whatsoever. We've talked a little bit about kind of some of the things we see in terms of the workplace and, you know, potentials for burnout. But maybe we should talk about why it's important to address burnout, right? Because that's what we're here to do, is to try to, you know, see what some of the problems are and hopefully offer solutions. And I one thing I read that showed signs of burnout that are critical to recognize, you know, and obviously I'm in management, so these are things I look for, is physical and mental exhaustion or fatigue, disruption in sleep or no sleep, anxiety, depression, feeling detached or social withdrawal, headaches. I've definitely had that problem before when I've been burned out. Physical health issues generally, trouble focusing or concentrating. And then this can be the thing where I think all of us can struggle, is that you start to become inefficient and then lack that attention to detail, because, and you could be working all night, but then feeling like you're not making really progress. And I'm assuming it's a combination of all these things. You're physically and mentally exhausted. And then one of the things I think that was touched on a little bit is that your personal life starts to deteriorate. So why don't we talk about, you know, kind of what do you try to do, each of you, when you can start yourself seeing these signs of burnout in your own work-life balance? And how do you try to get yourself out of that?
I guess for me, I think, you know, the first thing I consider is, okay, do I see an end in sight? You know, like, is this getting through discovery or getting through trial? Not that, you know, like writing it out, for lack of a better term, is the best solution. But that's kind of my first step, is how long is this going to be a problem before I need to start taking an action?
Yeah, I know for me, it's my husband is indispensable at recognizing this because I do work from home and he can actually see my work habits and how I work. He is fantastic at calling me out when he sees, you didn't come to bed till 3 a.m. like four nights in a row. Are you okay? And he just, his ability to not necessarily call me out, but just recognize my patterns and behavior have been really helpful to teaching me how to recognize it in myself. And I think Casey's got a really good point. Sometimes you're just doing something like trial, or you've just got 2 weeks of depositions and you just need to push through, and seeing that end in sight, I think is really, really, really helpful. But normally once I start recognizing some of these symptoms, when I start recognizing, or when my husband tells me some of these are popping up more, that's when I start talking about it more. I'll just mention it in conversation with partners, even if I'm not asking for something to change. I think awareness sometimes is just as important, even if you know nothing can change, right? Even if you're just moving towards that end deadline in those 2 weeks, still just letting the partner know, hey, I slept 2 hours the last couple nights. Like, I'm not at my peak performance right now, or I could use a break, or this is just where I am. That's kind of how I normally start. That's how I normally start acknowledging what I'm going through and just mentioning it to people.
Yeah, and I think it's important to either friends or family. I have similar, Kate, because sometimes I get so busy with meetings and work that I don't have time to eat lunch, because it's all of a sudden it's like 2:30 in the afternoon and I didn't eat lunch. Then I mentioned it to my husband. And so now it's kind of like, so what'd you eat for lunch today? You know, kind of thing. Or I'll be home and it's like Friday night and all of a sudden I'm on my phone sending an email. And he's like, so what is it? Do you really need to be doing that right now? So it kind of calls me out a little bit, which is really good. But then, you know, there are times, and I understand like where you see the end in sight, but I remember having times where you've just been cranking on depots and traveling nonstop, and the end is in sight, but it's very far in the future, right? Because it's all of a sudden, well, that trial is in 4 or 5 months. So not only do I need to make it to the trial, I got to make it through the trial. So how do you try to cope with that when you are already feeling burned out? Yes, the end is in sight, but the finish line is pretty far down the road.
Yeah, I think I'd go back to what Kate said, is that's when you start having those conversations. Either to let people know where you're at, or to even ask to get off a case and to shift your workload if you need to. I think I've done this in the past with mentors and like an organic side and the structural side, but also with the partners who I'm working on specific cases with, which I feel like it's hard to do as an associate because you don't really pick the cases that you're on sometimes. And you can't really make a decision of what you're going to focus on or prioritize, but it's having a conversation with someone who can make that decision.
And even though I haven't been to trial yet, I've had similar experiences where you just know you're going to have to crank for like a month or two. And for me, the things that tend to help the most beyond talking to associates and partners and letting them know and asking for help on other cases is I just need to clear my head every once in a while. And having a dog has actually been fantastic for that. It's the 10-minute breaks where he just needs to go outside and run around a little bit and I have to play fetch with him. And that's 10 minutes where I am not thinking about work and I am in nature and there is sun on my face. And I'm just playing with a dog and that just makes me happy. And those little moments throughout the day, it doesn't have to be an hour of exercise. It doesn't have to be a big hike. It doesn't have to be taking a weekend off. But even those little 10, 15 minutes are just enough to kind of calm me down in the moment, make me take some deep breaths, and then I can get back into it a little easier.
So then what do you think in terms of management of law firms or just law firms in general, what can we do to make sure that we see the signs of attorneys getting burned out and do something about it, whether it's resources, having a conversation? What would you, from your points of view, think would be helpful?
I think it's really interesting that when you went through the signs of burnout, they're not things you see very easily on people if you don't interact with them day to day. So I know there's I am the person who will scream from the rooftops the benefits of working from home and how good it is for billing and mental health and stuff. But I think I think one of the things that makes an office worthwhile, and I'm coming back around to knowing why they're so important. But if you don't see someone every day, you don't kind of notice these changes in them because they're much more subtle. And when you're on a 1-hour phone call with someone over Zoom, they can hide all this, right? Like, none of this necessarily comes up. So I do, in a lot of ways, think that this going back into the office and being present, both even if you're not burned out, but being present for other people who might need you to recognize it in them, I think that is going to be an important part of it, is keeping those social connections at work and just checking in with people.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. So now I'm reflecting on times I've been busy before, and I've even had partners who sit down the hall comment on when I've come in earlier, when I've stayed late, and whether I'm essentially living at the office. And I think they have a better pulse on that than I really appreciate. And, probably even goes beyond presence in terms of, how I'm interacting with them, or whether I'm willing to get lunch or stuck with my door closed all day, instead of having it open and saying good morning to them when they walk by.
Yeah. And I one of the things I used to have real struggles with was migraine headaches, and it would be debilitating. And a lot of it was exacerbated because of stress, lack of sleep, et cetera. Was that when I was in a burnout, and again, and not at this firm, but elsewhere, it was sort of like recognize that I had a migraine because I obviously needed to sometimes not be at work because of it. But it was almost like a ding against me. So it was like, oh, geez, she's got this problem with headaches, as opposed to, I wonder if this is because she's burned out and not sleeping and sleeping on the floor of her office. The thing is with burnout and making sure that we take care of attorneys, and in particular associates, is that healthy, happy lawyers bill more, and that's good for business. So the bottom line is it's good for business. And kind of curious your take on that, the two of you.
I am not sure that's necessarily always, even if it's understood, it doesn't always feel like it comes out in practice day to day. I feel like we're often very reactive to workload management. And I think Casey brought this up a little bit earlier. It's normally on the associates to tell people when they are overworked or when they have too much on their plate, as opposed to maybe a little more front end looking at hours or looking at associates or checking in with them before they're assigned to cases or tasks. I've definitely been assigned cases or put on cases without being asked if I had time for them when I did not. I have also been asked if I could take on a case. And when I said I really just couldn't with my current workload, the response was, too bad, we need you on this case. So I think there's some staffing that goes on that I'm not sure if it's the full picture staffing, right? Like if you really need me on this case, where are you going to take some work away from me, or how are you going to help me balance that out? So I feel like right now, one of the things that would help is if the partners or people who are staffing cases could be a little bit more proactive in thinking about those things and checking in on it. Because right now it feels like the burden is a lot on the associates to raise their hand when it's already too late.
Yeah, that hits home. I dealt with that this year. And it is tough. When I dealt with it earlier, actually had a situation like that earlier this year, and I just had to have an honest conversation with the partners and make them make the decision. But it was at a point where, I wasn't going to be able to manage it all. And they did have to make a decision. One of the options wasn't, okay, keep working at this pace. Or if that was an option, I probably wouldn't be here right now. And that's, that's really where it was at. Just, I had to really strike a better balance, or I wasn't going to be happy. I wasn't going to be, putting out good work product, and internally we were going to suffer. And at the end of the day, the client would have suffered too.
Right, because it's like you're gonna reach your breaking point, and then something's gonna give. And I know I was in that place when I was an associate before, where And this is where I learned it's kind of like, it's not me, the associate, wasn't my responsibility. The partners have to talk to each other and figure out how to reshuffle things to make sure that, because it's not sustainable. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I remember just crushing it. And yes, you're getting a lot of work done, but much to your own expense in terms of your physical and mental well-being, where you literally think you're at your breaking point and just every single day feels like, you know, you just wake up, you know, rinse, repeat, right? With like a few hours of sleep. So then, you know, to that point, what do we do in terms of how we can help to prevent burnout, whether it's just on your own personal level, we've touched on a few things, or what can a law firm do to help with burnout, particularly with the associates?
For me, I think on a personal front, like exercise is key. I have to have my hour workout in the morning. I feel like that's when I'm not on my phone, no one's emailing me, and I get a little bit of isolation, which keeps me sane. But in terms of the firm, I think having a strong support system and that community is really important. You know, you can have that structurally, like through a formal mentor, or even organically. Like April, I know I've connected with you, and we haven't even necessarily worked on cases together, but I know I could go to you if I had any problem. And feeling like I had that support and multiple people that I can talk to like that is really important. And I think starting that conversation.
I echo that. And I appreciate Dario, one of my mentors. He checks in with me pretty frequently about my workload because he knows it's been a problem in the past. So I do appreciate when there is that support system in place that kind of it allows them to be proactive about it and make me think about it when I'm not even thinking about it. If I'm two heads down trying to get deadline to deadline, he'll force me to kind of come up and just be like, is this something we got to talk about now? Or are you okay? And I think that's the other piece of it that's really important is just open communication. I think it's talked about when it's a problem, but I think it also when it's a problem in either direction, right? Like partners say, reach out to us if you don't have enough work, reach out to us if you have too much work. I feel like there's still that middle ground of just how, what your workload is should just be part of conversations. It should just be not only when it's a problem, but just checking in with people, making sure they have the right workload. But it also ties into attorney development because it could also be, are you getting the right type of work? Are you getting the opportunities to do new things? So I think open communications doesn't necessarily need to be stress focused or work-life balance or about burnout, but even just talking about what type of work do you have? Are you getting the opportunities you want? Part of that conversation includes, are you overworked? Are you underworked? Do you need a break? So I think more of those types of communications would be helpful as well. And I actually do think our firm does pretty well at that.
Well, yeah, because when you're so in it, it's hard to know you need to come up and take a breath of air. And then all of a sudden someone else has a different perspective and they can kind of see what's going on and you can try to dissect it. And then hopefully if it's a partner, they can try to figure out what we can do to get you off some cases or kind of rebalance things. You know, one of the other things we, you know, you hear all these different terms, the great resignation, the great reshuffling. You know, one of the concerns that I have, and I know that law firms generally have, is retention, right? You know, you have the high performers, maybe the ones that are called upon to do work because you do a great job. So everyone wants you on their case. So then, you know, how do we, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, but what can firms do to make sure that we can keep the talent?
Yeah, this is not the first time I've had this conversation this year. actually, it was the exact question my mentor asked me. You know, the first time I met with them is, what can we do? And I feel like for me, a lot of that comes down to setting boundaries and having those conversations, but. It's a little bit more than that in terms of learning how to set boundaries. It's not easy to say no. You know, I've had a lot of conversations about this over the last year. And people like, oh, just say no when new work comes in. But it's not that simple. You know, when you're on that phone call, you know, you almost feel guilty if you say no, and it doesn't seem like an option.
And sometimes it's not an option, even if you turn it down. Sometimes the answer is figure it out. which has been a little disappointing. But in terms of retention, though, I think I mentioned part of, or maybe I didn't mention this, but one of the things I struggled with this year with being having too much work on my plate is I was being reactive. So I was moving deadline to deadline in a case and I was getting stuff done, but I never got to take that step back and just think forward about the case and think more strategically about it and come up with new creative ideas. And that's a real skill that I feel like I didn't get to develop as much as I wanted to this year. And that overwork and that burnout can lead to losing out on things like certain skill development, or getting some of those new opportunities. So again, I think this kind of comes down to just being open about workload, both in terms of how much it is, but the type it is. Because if you're giving your associates the good opportunities they want and the opportunities for growth, while not working them to death on just cranking out stuff they've already done before, that's going to lead to higher job satisfaction, which is going to lead to people staying. So I think it all kind of fits in together of making sure people have the right assignments, but also not too much work.
Yeah, because if you can't think strategically because you're kind of looking at the vein of the leaf, not even the leaf and not even the tree and not even the forest, it kind of takes away from that. And then also, too, I know sometimes when associates are too busy, they don't have the opportunity to take advantage of some of the professional development programs that are even offered to them because you're just too busy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's I've been trying to schedule needed deposition training, but every weekend it's offered for the rest of the year has either a trial or a major deadline within a couple days of it. And it just was something I couldn't make work in these 3 months. So it's also making sure you can carve out time to do those things, which is important too.
And then what about, I know we've talked about kind of having support, having mentors or official or unofficial mentors that you can talk to try to kind of put up the yellow flag, right, that you're getting in that burnout phase or in the midst of it, a red flag. What about what firms can do in terms of having like employee assistance programs where if you need to talk to a counselor, for example, that's something that is offered, you know, as part of the firm's resources? How important are those types of programs?
I would say a lot of that is really like you're going to get out of it what you put into it. So if it's offered, I think it will be helpful if we take advantage of it. And it's not something that just sits as an option that people really don't utilize. And I think that's the same thing, you know, with a lot of our mentors too. Like you're going to make the most out of that connection and the conversation that you have with someone. So I do think that they are really helpful, but we almost need a little bit more encouragement to take advantage of it. And, you know, maybe that's on, a knowledge side of knowing what's out there and what it entails. But also on a comfort side and knowing that there's no stigma associated with taking part in that and to using it to become a better attorney and to strike a better balance.
Yeah, I think the awareness aspect is really important because I don't even think I'm aware of all the employee assistance programs we have. And I feel like they're mostly talked about during benefit selection or during like that kind of 2 month period around benefits is there's a lot of information there and it's all the benefits. It's health, dental, vision, employee assistance, this, and it's kind of almost too much to take in. So I think gentle reminders about these programs throughout the year that they're there. And I think something that's also important that gets to the stigma issue too, is it would be really helpful to see leaders and partners and other people using those programs and talking about them and just making it something that's just open and done. So you just acknowledge that part of being a lawyer is that it's hard. And sometimes you have to just talk to someone for a day and maybe it's not recurring. Maybe it's just, I had just one really hard day and needed to vent and I used this and it was great. You should consider it. Cause I think that's the other thing, even when they're out there, if they're not being used and people aren't saying, and this was helpful, it's kind of I have limited time. Do I try this program I know nothing about that might end up being worthless or not? So I think there's a lot of things that could help those be used more. But I do think at the end of the day, it's you get out of it what you put into it too.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And first of all, I have said to a few associates that they should take advantage of this when I knew they were kind of struggling. And it, yeah, you're right. I feel like even if it's not the best person that you could ever possibly see, it's better than nothing. And you have someone to talk to. And I will say that I took advantage of an employee assistance program. I actually used it through my husband's employer because my mother died in February. And so I got sessions and I was doing it for once a week and then kind of went to once a month and have a few of them left. And it was really, really helpful. So I'm happy to put it out there that I felt like I needed some tools and because, you know, I was really busy at work, but then had this other thing that was going on that was a huge life stressor. And knew that I just needed to get some assistance that I couldn't really just get from talking to friends and family.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. Like sometimes I like to think about things in my life that I can outsource that other people are much better capable of handling. And I think that's one of those things, you know, where you're like maybe you need a professional or, you know, it's just it's something that we aren't really well suited to handle in the environment that we work in.
Well, and especially because I feel like we're the kind of people like, oh, I got this. Oh, no, I can handle this, right? It's like, you know, keep bringing it on. But there are people that have tools they can provide you that all of a sudden they say something a certain way and it completely resonates with you and you have one of those kind of eureka moments. At least that's been my experience.
That's definitely been my experience because I've used therapy throughout my life on and off as I needed it. And the biggest reason I have found it valuable is the tools they provide, because things that used to work for me in high school to deal with things didn't work in college, and things that used to work for me in college to help manage things didn't work when I entered the professional industry. And my last things that worked in my last job don't necessarily work in my job as a lawyer now. So I, as you've had to learn new tools with how to manage stress and things, therapists just, they know the book. They know everything that has worked for something and they can just like give you 100 ideas for you to implement. So especially if people are struggling with dealing with stress or dealing with burnout, like if nothing else, they can just give you a list of things to try. And that's in and of, that's very, very helpful because sometimes you just don't even know where to start when you're so far into it.
And also, too, it needs to be kind of normalized so that people don't think it's a perceived weakness, right? You're just like we're all resourceful. I know the three of us certainly are. So this is just being resourceful, like Casey, I think you said outsourcing, right? Yeah. This is not in our wheelhouse in terms of expertise. So finding some resource, whether it's talking to someone or some materials or whatnot that can help you when you're in that place that's like kind of you, someone needs to reach in and kind of get you out of it a little bit.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think, you know, even 2 to 3 years ago, and certainly like 5, we wouldn't have been talking about, you know, stress or burnout or mental health like we are today. And I think that's a good start. You know, we're not there yet, but we're getting there. And even just having those conversations is really important. It's starting to destigmatize it. And, you know, I think people are starting to become more comfortable with this nature. But, you know, I know like growing up in athletics, you know, if you're hurt, okay, shake it off, get up and keep playing. You know, the same thing now. Okay. If you had a tight deadline, right, well, you have another one coming around the corner. But now it's finding ways to really just better manage it.
Yeah. And actually just kind of to your analogy with sports is, you know, I think now in sports psychology with professional athletes that are willing to admit that they struggle with it, I really struggled with that when I was in high school and it prohibited me from feeling that I could take that competitiveness in terms of my sport to college because I simply did not have the resources and support to do it. So maybe that's kind of analogous to what we're trying to do here in a work environment.
For physical injuries, we recognize, like if you twist your ankle, you get an ankle brace. Like you have something support you for a limited amount of time, and then you can move on once you're healed. It's interesting that we can't make that mental jump. That sometimes, emotionally or mentally, we might need the same kind of support for a limited amount of time, or even for a long amount of time, just to get through things. So I hope that stigma can be broken down a lot more. And I think people just openly talking about the fact that, yes, they've used employee assistant programs, or yes, they go to therapy, or they have a therapist, or they've done it before, they'll do it again if they need it. I think those kind of things are very, very good sign that hopefully this has become much more normalized in the future.
And then how do each of you feel about doing things where you block something off in your calendar, like that 1 hour to do your workout in the morning, Casey, or, you know, Kate going out and playing with the dog? It's so, because it's important to keep, you know, you from entering the burnout zone, or from, you know, gives you a little relief from it. I mean, but then at the same time, do we feel guilty? Because I do. I know I'm like, I'm blocking it out so I can actually go get a sandwich, you know, and it seems kind of ridiculous because, like, what if someone needs me for that hour? So, like, how do we deal with being our own worst enemy in that way?
Yeah, I know I use my Outlook calendar as a crutch for a lot of that. You know, my morning workouts are in there, even if they're at 6 a.m. They still get in there. You know, if I have an appointment, it's going to be in there, and probably the 15 to 20 minutes that I need to travel to get there. So it's, I use it, and sometimes I feel bad about it, but it's also just getting to a point where I feel like I have to put myself first, or I'm not going to be happy, and I won't be providing good client service.
Yeah, and I've really gotten over feeling guilty about stuff like that. I do like face appointments, like facials or massages. I'll schedule them in the middle of the day and block off time for it. And quite frankly, I've don't tell anyone I work with. I've even done it on filing days because I'm just like, this is the only time I could schedule it in the next month, and it's an hour, and I'm just going to get it done, and I'll get my stuff done ahead of time. But honestly, it's I just recognize massages, facials, time with my dog, time with my family. Those are just, they're things that just help me keep going and help me function and help me physically feel good. Massages especially, normally, like when she's going on my shoulders or something, I'll be like, oh, that was the headache I had last week. Like, let's work that one out. So they end up being things that help me be a better employee, because I'm not going to have a debilitating migraine next week because I found out where in my back was causing that. So I think it kind of circles back to April, what you said, of that happy, healthier attorneys, they bill more and they stress less and they function better. So I think it's internalizing the fact that if we keep going this way, if you don't make those time for yourself, if you don't do that, you're just not going to be as good as if you did. And I think that's something I've started to embrace more as I've grown as a lawyer.
Well, yeah, and it goes to self-care. You know, same thing I have, where a few people that work with me know that on Tuesdays and Thursdays after work, I go and take Pilates, and I'm going to be gone for about an hour and a half. I will be back in the office at 6:30 if you need me. You know, kind of know my schedule, but it's like something I need to do for my own self-care to help me keep it together, right? So maybe why don't we wrap up? I don't know if you have any final thoughts, or we can end on, you know, we're already on a bit of a high note, but some final thoughts to end on a high note from either of you.
I think it's just, you just got to make time. I think it's recognize the benefits of making time for yourself, the benefits for you as a person, the benefits for your health, the benefits of just going out day to day and not feeling dread or exhaustion. And at the end of the day, all the guilt and the feelings we talked about taking that time, they're not really supported, because you do become a better lawyer. You are a better employee. You probably have a better work-life balance. You're probably a better spouse or a better daughter or a better mother or all of those things if you do take this time for yourself. So I think it's really, I hope people can just internalize that time for yourself and that self-care. And it doesn't only prevent burnout, but it makes life better.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like my final takeaway is that, you know, we've talked about a lot. There's a lot to chew on, and it's hard to start to implement this. So it almost needs to be in baby steps. You know, like maybe you want to get into working out or, you know, more self-care, but I don't feel like you can start doing that, you know, next week or in a day. And it's kind of just, you know, starting that in baby steps. So okay, maybe you start to work out one day a week, or you go for a 30-minute walk. And then build on that so that it is actually achievable, and, you know, it's not something that you do for a week and then stop. because it was too far outside of what we've been doing and what we've been used to.
Now that, and I actually have on Saturday, I've always wanted to take a pottery class where you learn how to use the pottery wheel. So I decided, I was like, I feel like it's okay on a Saturday afternoon for 2.5 hours to not be available. So I'm actually, I have that starting on Saturday, and I'm kind of excited about that because I think it's the same thing. You get that meditative part to it, I'm hoping. And then also you can't be thinking about something else because you have to focus on what's in front of you. Well, this has been a really excellent conversation. Thanks to both of you, because I know you are so busy, for taking the time, but I think it's an important discussion to get out there for our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to Sidebars on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, or your preferred podcasting platform. And don't forget to rate or leave a review.
If you enjoyed Sidebars, we invite you to check out Kilpatrick Townsend's Medicine and Molecules blog at kilpatricktownsend.com to read, watch, and listen to other related insight on patent law. We'll also put that information in our show notes. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and are not necessarily those of Kilpatrick Townsend.